Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, so for today's episode with Jo Malone London, we thought we would highlight some of its best offerings to serve as inspiration. Whoever that special person is in your life, Jo Malone London's vast range, thoughtful sets, curated boxes, and deluxe and travel-sized candles give endless options to explore and for all budgets. You can't go wrong with its best-selling Scarlet Poppy Cologne Intense. Rich and distinctive, it has tonka bean, vanilla, almond, and tobacco inside, giving it a velvety quality that stands out for all the right reasons. Another classic to explore is Jo Malone London's Lime, Basil and Mandarin scent. A hit every year for all types of gifting, including Mother's Day, it is a cult classic for a good reason. It's a comforting blend of peppery basil, white thyme and mandarin. The scent is so bright, it has a beachy feel that everybody loves. Finally, we love anything that can be personalised, both in-store and online, to help you create a truly unique gifting experience. To shop all gifting, head over to jomalone.co.uk.
You're listening to the Sherlock's podcast, your guide to a more stylish life.
Hello and welcome to the Sherlock's team podcast with me, Heather Steele. Today I'm joined by Nana Achiampong, Lou Huff and Harriet Russell. Welcome.
Hi. I was pausing because I was going to be like, welcome back Harriet,
because you've not been on for a little while, but we're glad to have you back on the sofa.
Yes, I had a bit of a poorly start to the new year, struck down for a month of bed rest, which was very boring and very tedious, but yeah, very happy to be back and feeling a bit normal.
Amazing. Well, it's great to have you back on the podcast so far. We'll start off. What's everybody been up to recently or this weekend, Nana?
This weekend, I had the Brits. So that was the big thing, basically. I had that on Saturday. Obviously, then stayed in bed for the majority of yesterday.
No, she went to three after both.
Me and my friends, we like to do a little bit of party hopping after the Brits. So we went to the Warner Music after party. Then we went to Ray's. And then DJ Manny Norte, he had one with Bacardi as well.
So
we went
so to that. Fun.
And yeah, it's just a really great night. The awards were really fun.
It looked like a really good year.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
It just looked like everyone, I was looking online, like it just looked like a vintage year.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. All the performances were great. My fave was actually Rema and Kylie Minogue at the end. Those two were definitely, and Ray as well, obviously.
Yeah, it was Ray's year.
Yeah, Ray, yeah, with her six awards. So yeah, they were all fantastic. And big shout out to Clara Antfo.
Yeah,
she's
amazing.
She did such a great.
I love her.
Maya Roman, also amazing.
Yeah.
Clara's my girl. So yeah, she was really, really great. She looked amazing, styled by Amy.
Yeah, amazing.
And yeah, it was just a really fun night, everyone.
Where were you, Sarah?
We were actually sat like in the gods to start with. But luckily, I have quite a few friends that had boxes. So they wrangled a few wristbands for us.
Nice.
So we actually ended up, we were in one box, but then everyone's like, oh, I'm in this number. And then like, I obviously went and saw Daisy.
Yeah.
And Sapner as well, because they had put up what number box they were in. So I was like, oh, I'll go and surprise them. And they were
box hopping.
So that was my weekend, and then stayed in a really nice apartment near the O2. So that was great. And then, they had a nice swimming pool. So I went and
Do you have a hangover cure?
My hangover cure is food and then lots of sleep.
Yeah.
So I was saying to you guys earlier, I had an afternoon nap probably about 4 or 5 o'clock, woke up, had some dinner, and then fully went back to sleep again. I think if you have a nap that late, you think, oh my gosh, you've ruined it for the whole evening.
Yeah,
I was absolutely fine.
If you're that tired, it's just a good thing, right?
Woke up, had brunch, had some eggs and hash browns and things.
Yes, nice.
And then had my nap. Woke up, had some jerk chicken and rice, and then went back to sleep.
Well, that's a good hangover cure. It's a bit of spice and rice and good carbs.
Exactly.
Were there booty parties?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yeah. Everything was just free-flowing, champagne, and then Bacardi at the end of the night, which I don't think that was great to mix.
Is your March feeling a little bit more
calm? Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. There are no plans. My boyfriend and I are actually going away this weekend.
Oh,
we haven't actually booked anywhere. Maybe like Sopwell House. Oh, nice. So I was actually asking Sherry last week when we were doing the pod. I was like, can you recommend any? But to be honest, we'll probably end up in Soho Farmhouse. But yeah, just a night or two away, hopefully. That'll just be nice. To like... chill. And then the rest of the month there really is nothing, which I'm so excited about.
I'm just chuckling because I know when we were on the podcast last time you said, and you're like, I have really mad weeks and then don't do anything at the weekend, whereas it seems like
this weekend was exception to the rule, but the rest of the weekends in March are going to be very chill.
Amazing. Lou, what have you been up to?
I had a really boring weekend. It was just kind of trying to entertain Bobu in new ways. We went to a new bougie soft play.
Where was that?
It's actually around here.
You might have gone to the Brits, but I was
this is like a real tale of two halves. Very unfashionable weekend. And then we went to Battersea Park Zoo. Did all the things I just never thought I would spend my weekend doing. So it wasn't like the most inspiring, but had a really cute time with Bobby.
But yesterday was lovely, though.
I
could see from my bed.
When you open your eyes.
From the swings. I was really appreciating that sunshine. We've got some fun weekends coming up. So it was just a nice family.
A reset. Lovely. Harriet.
Well, this weekend was quite boring because I was saying before we started recording that I have to be obviously quite careful in terms of pacing myself. I'm still not fully out of the woods, so I have to... preserve my energy a bit. And then last weekend had been really busy. I went to see...
couldn't have gone to the Brits then.
No. It's just not on the cards at the moment. I went to see the new Jez Butterworth, Sam Mendes.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
California. It was really good. It was fascinating, actually, because it's in the Harold Pinter Theatre, which is obviously a big West End venue. And there were lots and lots of spare seats.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's interesting. I think Ralph Fiennes wrote an article on the BBC a few months ago now saying basically what's gone wrong with theatre tickets, London theatre tickets specifically. It's so expensive.
They're ridiculous. They're prohibitive, aren't they?
They are, and it's a difficult one because the theatres obviously went through a hellish period in COVID. They're having to recoup losses. A lot of their funding's been cut. And I think it was the guy who runs the Young Vic, I forget his name, he's moving on anyway because he said, basically, I'm not running a theatre, I'm a budget manager.
Oh, really?
And this is not, it's so stifling to creativity because it's just constantly being told there's no money, there's no money, there's no money. And he said, basically, we have no government funding. Mm. It went from something like 300,000 a year at the Young Vic to zero this year. And he said, I have to pay my cast, I have to pay all my creatives, I have to heat and light the place. So I have to put ticket prices up. But no one wants to pay because we're in a cost of living, which is understandable.
Also, Young Vic's traditionally been a bit cheaper, hasn't it?
I mean, I'd still say it's one of the best value venues. I went to see a play before Christmas, which was excellent. It had, do you remember the guy who played John in Peaky Blinders?
Yes.
Joe Cole.
Yeah.
He was excellent in it. And it had Jared Harris in it.
Oh, yes.
The Crown.
Which play was that?
It's a Harold Pinter play. I forget the name of it. But it's set in the East End anyway. Mm-hmm. It was brilliant. And I think tickets were like 47 quid. Which
that's still quite a lot, though.
Had premium seats. Yeah. So I'm sure it could have been cheaper than that if you'd sort of pick your spot.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, Hills of California, over £100. And of course, Plaza Suite got a lot of attention for charging,
hundreds,
£300 ticket, basically.
I know, I keep getting emails actually being like, your last chance to see.
That's
because people aren't buying their tickets.
Yeah. Well, it's Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick, which they had started performing before the pandemic together. Then it obviously all got canned. Mm. Now they're back doing this. There's definitely something that needs fixing in that whole sphere.
Yeah, it needs, they're still, I feel like the Barb kind of quite good at doing sort
of. Yeah, I think they're good.
Depending on where you're seated, they're sort of can be
and Bridge Theatre as well. I've seen a couple Bridge of things. Theater
even the National used to be, the National used to be capped.
Yeah.
But we went to see Michael Sheen in a Dylan Thomas play right after the pandemic, and we just noticed it immediately. We were like, tickets there were normally about 65, and now we were paying like 89.
Yeah.
And then over the years, it's gone up again. So yeah, it's tricky. I mean, you do have to sort of pick your venue. But I would say, you know, the Lyric in Hammersmith is another really good.
Oh, yeah, that's a great thing.
Good venue, more affordable. So, yeah, maybe it's just time to start supporting Fringe Theatre a bit more.
Yeah, was the play good?
It was excellent.
Yeah.
So, I don't know that I can sit here and be like, it's definitely worth spending £100. But, yeah, it's funny, actually. I was saying to Georgina, who's obviously another big theatre buff on our team, and it opened and it was like four siblings have come home because their mother's dying. And it's like all these, you know, unsaid family issues. And I thought, oh God, I think I've seen this play like 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And then within 20 minutes, literally the stage revolves and you sort of go back in time. And from there on in, it was just unreal. Like the staging, the production value, a lot of it is very musical. So it's not a musical, but there's a lot of musical elements, which you just think, how many times have they had to rehearse that? Because it is note perfect, not a sing. And they've got like four kids in it.
Yeah.
And they're all incredible. So yeah, I highly, if you can get a cheaper ticket, because they start selling them off at the end of the run.
Maybe.
I'd say go for it. Because you won't be disappointed.
Good.
And what did you get up to?
I actually went to Charleston Farmhouse this weekend, which I hadn't been to before. So in case anybody doesn't know, I mean, I feel like more people know about it now because it seems to be sort of all over Instagram most weekends. But it's basically a museum / gallery space in East Sussex, which was the farmhouse where Vanessa Bell, Virginia Woolf, Duncan Grant, everybody lived. That sort of artist commune, Bloomsbury group, they lived in, well, they started living there in the 20s and 30s and then continued living there until Duncan Grant died in the 70s. But it's, you'll probably recognise it, it's basically this amazing farmhouse, but they painted it all themselves. So it's got all the, like even the fireplaces, like absolutely the bath, like absolutely everything is like painted in this amazing way that's actually become quite popular now in interior design. But yeah, it was really amazing to see in the flesh. It's an incredible place. It looks like super modern, even though it was all done, yeah, basically 100 years ago onwards. But it was really, really good. So we went there, had a nice bit of cake. But they've also got a David Hockney exhibition on at the moment. So yeah, went and looked around that as well. But yeah, would heartily recommend if you need a day trip from London. It was good to...
How long did it take?
Well, I live in Brighton, so it was like a 15-20 minute drive. But I think otherwise you can definitely drive in like an hour and a bit. It's not too far away at all. But yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah.
Wig.
And then yesterday I went to go see June Part 2.
How was it?
It's on my watch list.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I was going to go this weekend. Yeah. And then my boyfriend found out I was going to go and see it with potentially with friends because he works shifts, so he's not always free at the weekends. And yeah, he got very upset. So I've promised to wait until he's free another weekend, which is another 2 weeks.
I'm sure it'll still be on. So yeah, it's the biggest sort of box office smash of the year so far. So I think they'll still be running in a couple of weeks. Yeah. But have you seen the first one recently?
I did actually. I didn't ever see it at the cinema and regretted it actually, because I do think it's one of those films you should see big screen.
I agree.
But it was sort of, did it come out in 21? So maybe there was a pandemic sort of hangover.
Yeah, everyone who watched the first one and was excited, including Charlotte, we've had to wait ages because of the writer's strike.
Yeah,
and
well, I'm lucky because it didn't drop on Netflix for ages. It's only just come on there. So yeah, I watched it like for the first time 2 weeks ago. So I feel like I'm right up with the story.
We caught up with it on Saturday night at home and then went on Sunday to watch it. And I do think it's worth seeing at the cinema. Like even watching the first one at home on a big-ish screen, it doesn't have that same impact.
Yeah.
Like you need like the proper noises in your ears. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Zendaya was great.
I was going to say,
Timothy Chalamet was good.
Pretty stellar.
Yeah, it's good. Okay. The only thing I'd say, like it is good, but there's clearly going to be a third one as well. And I feel like this was like...
There are six books.
Yeah. But I still think they're still in book one, though, now.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
they haven't actually moved on to Children of Messiah.
No, not yet. Okay, so, it's the book, for anyone listening or watching who doesn't know, was written in 1965. So it's like...
Oh, wow.
Like sort of OG science fiction, like lots of people might watch it and be like, oh, it's predictable, it's kind of similar. But I think all those newer ones are actually just taking inspiration from the book. But it was good, but I just think... It was kind of bridging stuff that had happened in the first one and setting stuff up for the next film. So probably wasn't like the most amazing plot.
Obviously, my boyfriend made me watch the first one with him. He's a massive June stan. And I said to him afterwards, I was like, production value is amazing. I don't want to take anything away from it. But it was like, not a lot really happened.
Yeah.
As a lot of it felt to me like it was just setting up the story.
Exactly.
Like we've arrived literally now at the entrance gate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
After a 2.5 hour film.
Yeah. So. And now this one's nearly three. And again, yeah, I think you have to appreciate it for the visuals and the sound and bits of the story and stuff. I think it's probably not the most plot-driven sort of action film. But I did really enjoy it.
Timothy Chalamet is going to be like 50 by the time they finish this.
He did look noticeably older in this one versus the first one.
But yeah, I think he looks a lot older than he is. Yeah.
Well, I think he just still looks like 15 to me.
Me too.
In the first film, there's a shot of him, the first you see of him, he's like in bed and he hasn't got a top on and he does look about 13, like a 13-year-old boy.
But I think in the book, have you read the books?
No.
No, nor have I. But apparently in the books, Paul Atreides at the beginning is 16.
Yeah.
And then by the end, he's supposed to be about 30.
Yeah.
So deliberately, supposedly, Denis Villeneuve, who's directed it, like chose Timothy because he looks so young.
Yeah.
And then he would age each film.
That makes sense.
So, but obviously then they've had the pandemic. They didn't expect that delay. They've had the writer's strike delay.
So he's getting older.
He doesn't live that much older. It worked.
Says he's got quite a young face.
Yeah. But I also watched The Iron Claw last week as well. I really enjoyed it. And I know loads of people have been...
Such a sleeper hit.
Yeah, lots of people... Because it basically came out in the States in October and I've been waiting all this time to see it. I thought it was really good. And I do think it has been snubbed for award season. It hasn't been nominated for anything, any of the major things.
Any sort of like boxing.
Yes, I love a sport. Yeah. I really get into it.
Any sort of
contraband film and any boxing and any prison film.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, me too.
Wrestling, but it's still in a ring. Yeah.
There's a film called Warrior, which has got Tom Hardy and I forget his brother's name, and it's so good.
Well, this might be for you. Yeah. So it's based on the real life story of this wrestling dynasty called the Von Erichs in the sort of 70s and 80s. And there's four brothers. So there's one who's an actor I've never seen before. One who's Harris Dickinson, who is in A Triangle of Sadness, A Murder at the End of the World. And then Jeremy Allen White from The Bear, and then Zac Efron, who needs no introduction. So they're like the four brothers. So they're sort of overruled by this like really hard dad who was like a wrestler back in his day, and he had this signature move called the Iron Claw. But yeah, he's basically driving them all really, really hard. And it's basically a story about the four brothers and their relationship and how close they were. But the whole family was just basically cursed. And yeah, I remember coming out of the cinema and saying to my boyfriend, like, oh, did you enjoy it? And he was like, enjoy really is not the right word. Because I mean, it is just like, just horror after horror. And it's all true as well. Okay. And I was Googling afterwards, and there was another brother as well that they didn't put in because horrible things happened to him. And they were clearly like, actually, this is just going to look ridiculous. Troy put all this in as well. But it's really worth watching.
How did you see it? Is it cinema?
Cinema, but I think we saw one of the last sort of runs it was on because, it was one of those, you know, when you're like, oh, I've got to see that. And then it's like 3 weeks later and you're like scrabbling around to find a screening. But I think it'll be on Disney or something quite soon. Okay. It's really worth watching because it's got that sporting element. It's got an amazing like 80s soundtrack and
Pretzel's dancing.
There is a dance scene.
The aesthetic's very, I love the aesthetic of it.
It's amazing.
The 70s style, like the hairstyle.
Exactly. Like Lily James is in it and her hair over the years. You're like,
the warmth, the camera, like
it's brilliant. Yeah. But yeah, it's got like a real heart to the story as well. Like it is moving, and the acting across the board is all brilliant as well. So it's a bit of a shame. I think Zac Efron was really, really good in it. So you think he might have been up for an award or two?
I actually watched Hairspray on Saturday.
I love Hairspray.
That is him back in his movie. That's such
good film.
I think I know every word to every song.
Yeah, I think if I was really hungover, I could watch Hairspray and be really happy. That would like,
it's so good.
Lift me.
Yeah. I just started watching Talking on the Sporting front. This is, I get sucked into things. Apple TV, there is a new documentary called The Dynasty, which is about Tom Brady's football team. Like, I don't even watch American football, but here I am like this documentary and fully in it about how they've won like six Super Bowls and like it's from the start and how they got there and yeah, I'm really enjoying that.
It's like New England Patriots fan.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, they're cool. Yeah. Like, I only watched the Super Bowl for Usher, you know?
Yeah. But, like, hey, and now next year you'll be like, I know how it works.
Exactly.
And now I'm a sucker. I think a really good documentary.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it. It doesn't matter what it's about.
Have you talked about the Six Nations one?
No.
Oh, it's really good.
Is it? I heard mixed things that it was a bit boring.
Personally, I didn't think so. Mm. I did have a sort of an interest in rugby. I followed the World Cup quite closely. My dad played when he was younger and he was sort of star of his school. So it was just something we grew up with. So my sister then messaged me and said, oh, have you watched the Six Nations documentary? It's really good. And I have to say, after the first episode, I was a bit like, oh, I don't know if I need to sit through the whole of this. Mm. But then it was that thing, like the next night you think, yeah, no, I am going to watch the second one. Yeah. And before I knew it, I'd watch the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
I think it's really well done. They sort of, like most of these documentaries, whether it's the tennis one or the F1, they sort of, each episode, they sort of focus in on a particular team or a particular player on that team and follow them around. So it's been really nice because obviously Six Nations is happening at the moment.
Yeah.
And the timing of the release. I've been watching that. Yeah, me too. And I think it's given me such an insight into the game now. I feel so much more invested than I did before. So yeah, no, I really recommend it. If you've got even the slightest interest in rugby, or if you don't, you might get something out of it.
Yeah, I think that's the joy of a sports documentary because I have never really watched or been interested in rugby, but I'd probably watch a documentary on it.
Yeah.
I think if they're well made and they can sort of take you inside a story,
that's
what counts.
Yeah. That's where they get good.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Cool, right, Harriet, you've got a couple of fashion articles for us.
We've obviously had fashion weeks happening and what have you, but I just feel like the news keeps coming on the fashion front. And the first one was that Iris Apfel passed away.
I know.
Wake me up.
She was 102, so it was a long life lived.
She just had her 102nd birthday.
I know. And she's had to live quite a few years now without her husband. Mm. They had a really long, happy marriage from what I can tell. But when I saw it, I was like, it's almost like a bit of a light has gone out somewhere.
She had the most incredible life.
Oh my God. And just such an icon that I think will remain forever.
Yeah.
And just such an incredible, her approach to style and dressing. Mm. And she'll remain an inspiration forever.
Yeah.
She literally is like goals for me in terms of like colour.
Yeah. Print, I love colour.
And everything that she put together. Like a couple of years ago, she did a collection with H&M and I pretty much have the whole thing. Like, it is gorgeous. The skirt actually that I wore, I think last time we were doing something for the show, that was part of her collection. Like you say, her approach to style and everything is it's just,
well, in a world of minimalists, you know, minimalism is so huge and it's been so defining maybe for the last decade, and then you just sort of had her and so quintessentially doing it her way,
also always staying so true to her style.
That's what
and like having fun with it and not, you know, not that she was paying attention to trends or whatever, but like it's so intrinsically her.
She was just so authentic. And I think that's what you need, like style should be. Like whatever you enjoy dressing up as, or like enjoy having pieces in your wardrobe, as long as it feels authentic to you, that's going to show and that's going to radiate. And I think that's what happened with her.
100%. I think that's that, like, in a kind of saturated market as well. The true icons all have very different styles.
Yeah.
And it's not so much about
following trends.
No, or... exactly. Or that one style is really better than anything else. Mm. It's about being true to your style, being comfortable in what you're wearing, and that authentic look.
Yeah.
She said something, didn't she, that's like, oh, in a world that's really like grey and black and white, you know, be not be colourful, but as in like have fun. And like, you know, do stuff for you, like whatever brings you joy, whether it doesn't have to be bright colours or.
I really like that she wasn't a slave to designer brands.
Yeah.
Either. She was really, was there a documentary or like a 1 hour special on her
a few years ago.
I can't remember what it was called, if it's still available, but it sort of just followed her around, really. It was just a bit of a fly on the wall. And I remember distinctly her making this sort of pilgrimage to the sort of, I don't know if it was Upper West Side or Eastern New York, to find these like jewelry vendors that she was really friendly with. And they were just running like really low key, but like full of stuff, full of affordable stuff. And she'd obviously been going there for years and like loading up on stuff. And I really like that she wasn't, I mean, there's always a time and place for designer brands and investing. Mm. We obviously advocate that a lot, but at the same time, it was really nice to see that whole idea of like style doesn't have to cost a fortune.
Yeah.
Put into such consistent practice, I suppose.
Hard wardrobe as well. Like, what's going
to
happen?
Well, that's what I was about to say.
Going to?
You were just saying, weren't you, at the beginning, like how she's going to be remembered forever. But when you said that, it was already thinking in my head, like the V&A doing like this huge exhibition with, and in years to come as well, like retrospectives of her clothes, her life pictures, like.
There's got to be a Met Gala theme in her
That's what
she got signed by. Want to say IMG, but got signed at 98. That is absolute goals. Like, incredible.
I love seeing pictures of her when she's younger because she looks unrecognizable.
Really? I haven't really seen her.
That's what I mean. But how amazing that when you picture somebody, you're kind of thinking of her now.
Rather than the younger self.
Like Audrey Hepburn, you think of her like breakfast at Tiffany's rather than what she was.
Being 30.
Whereas with
so Iris. True. And all the brands, Loewe or whoever, are like pushing against ageism, aren't they? Like putting Maggie older Smith, women in their imagery. So, but she really is a pioneer in that sense.
Other big fashion news over last week was obviously the Chloe show, which I think went viral.
I love that.
You like lost your mind as soon as it happened.
She was not
I don't think I have been that inspired by a single show in years.
Really?
And, years. And I think actually generally all of Paris in particular, but this fashion month, I think I've enjoyed so much.
Me too.
Yeah, me too.
But Chloe really was like the standout. It was the new creative director, Chaima Kamali's first new collection. And wow.
She killed it. She absolutely, I loved at the end as well, like the clothes we'll get to in a minute, but at the end when her son went up to her and gave her a massive hug, I was like, oh my gosh, my ovaries. so cute. The clothes were, she just got the essence of Chloe, made it so fresh and new, and it was incredible.
It's that's how a new creative director can come in and pay homage to the brand so quintessentially well, but also make it feel modern and fresh and breathe new life into it. And like that kind of boho girl has not been cool for a long time.
Since Sienna Miller, back when.
And I used to be such a
I was going to say, I can imagine.
I'm sure we all were.
I can picture 2003 Lou, right?
Yes. Oh my God. And I had all of the Chloe campaigns. Every time a new one would come up, I'd rip them out, and I had my walls were literally covered with campaigns. And that was like my look, the ruffles and the jeans and the 70s inspired.
Yeah.
And so cool. She made it modern and fresh.
It sounds really polished. I think that was the difference. It's like Chloe, as you say, it's got this sort of boho heart. So it's quite easy sometimes for it to feel a bit just like, you know,
put together.
I think it was the leather, wasn't it? Like those leather capes, those leather jackets just felt so considered.
But it was like glamorous and it was sexy and it was polished and it was like, you know, you could just like every kind of element of that's like, that's what I wear when I cash. There's like a kind of grey cashmere.
Oh my gosh, the jumpsuit. That's what I with the belt.
With the belt.
And then the big, like I was saying to you, I have loads of Chloe sunglasses.
Yeah,
so again, the sunglasses were really good. So like the accessories.
Yeah.
all and of it together. It feels really wearable.
I was going to say, it's stuff that people can take away and actually buy. Yeah.
And also, this is Autumn Winter 24. So it's not a collection that's obviously going to come out soon, but I love it when you see a collection and you think, okay, I'm drawing inspiration for that for what I can wear now as well. And she is obviously, the reason why she's got it so right is she is a proper Chloe from the beginning. She was an intern. It's her third time working there. Yeah. She was an intern at the beginning.
Oh my God.
And I love this. She rocked up at the offices. She didn't know anyone there. She didn't have an appointment, didn't have a name. Just went in with her portfolio, went in demand to see someone. They were like, no, absolutely not. Stayed there for hours. In the end, that the studio director came, looked at portfolio. 2 weeks later, she got a job.
That's awesome.
Was an intern, worked with a junior designer. And now she's creative director and like done the most.
And she worked with the biggest names at Claire.
She's with Phoebe. She worked with Claire. She knows that brand at its heart. And what an amazing inspirational story.
It's a real full circle moment.
Yeah. Don't you think, actually? She also went, didn't she? After she left Chloe sort of in the middle there, she went to work for Anthony Baccarella at Saint Laurent. And I thought so much of that actually did come through in this collection. Like very powerful silhouette.
Yeah.
Not quite as like sexed up as maybe what Anthony does, but I definitely felt like the vibe of that. And apparently he used to say, like, she used to bring him ideas for collections and he would say, no, save that for when you go back to Chloe.
That's where she'd end up.
That's where she'd end up.
Yeah.
I love that. Because it doesn't often happen that way, does it? Like, in careers, like, you might have this dream job in mind, but it doesn't always.
Yeah.
Like, life goes like that, but how amazing that she has ended up exactly where she was meant to be.
As well, that, like, the show of the moment follows, like, a story like that. And it's not, like, crazy out there, different world. It's like, it's wearable fashion with like women at its core, and that's who she's designing for. And I just love it so much.
It was a really great show.
You mentioned the accessories, the catsuit. Were that either of you and Harriet, have you got any like one thing that was like your standout look?
I think the first look that came out was memorable. It's like a black leather cape short. It's sort of just below here, isn't it? And then it's this big ruffled, which I can't even really tell if it's a dress or just
a skirt. Yeah, or... it was like a white ruffled shirt and a little short, so then it's all kind of come down.
Cascading
and the most
down.
Amazing black, kind of, not like studded, but kind of wraparound, like pointed flats.
And this big, as Nana was saying, like big 70s sunglasses on it. And I mean, when I think of the show, that's the image that sits with me. But I don't know
I literally was going through and I was like, save.
Nana, did you have any other standouts?
It was the cashmere jumpsuit, catsuit, unitard, whatever we're calling it. That to me, I could like, it's kind of like this, but it's completely wearable and I would have that in my wardrobe like straight away with the belt, with the sunglasses.
So amazing.
With over the knee boots. Like, that is me.
Yeah. It's rock. The capes are the cape and the headbands.
There's also like a cognac-y coloured like leather jacket that looks very Saint Laurent inspired to me. It's got like a big shoulder on it. I think that's why I think that. But that was really beautiful as well.
A really good colour palette as well.
Green,
green.
That's what you want autumn winter. I know we're kind of still in it and I'm wearing bright green, but I'm just looking at like you've got the nice tones. Like that's what you want.
But it's funny, as you say, like none of the elements when we're talking about them sound like anything radical.
No, they're not. That's
and
it.
Yeah, how does it feel so exciting?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But that's really how you know she's done like such a great job. Like such an amazing show.
The Hermes show also was amazing.
Yeah.
Did you see that with the rain at the end?
Yeah. So I didn't see that.
Were they actually getting wet? Or was it like on the edges so that they didn't...
It looked like they did.
Yeah.
It looked like they did to me, but I was just wondering.
Yeah.
Don't know how they get insurance.
And the Loewe show, I did love.
Yeah,
as well.
Loewe also incredible.
Yeah. Had, for me, I already said I've spotted a handbag that I want. But yeah, the clothes and the shoes as well. You know, when they have the moment with the, whether it's the flower shoe, you could see the new shoe, which basically kind of looks like a belt.
Oh, yes.
Like kind of flapping over and it's a mule. Like, I mean, it's not very autumn winter, but already I'm like, that's the shoe that I want.
That's the shoe.
Yeah.
Paris is always the most amazing end to the season. But I just think this one in particular has been wrapped up so well with so much wearable inspiration, which I think is really inspiring, you know, because the price of things have got
so obscene. Yeah.
Well, we're all, we're sat here talking about this collection that I know I'm not going to be able to remember a single thing from.
I think you can draw inspiration from it. You can kind of work it in with your own wardrobe.
Yeah.
I think it's really exciting.
On that note, we've got some questions from listeners, viewers, and on our Sherlock's community. And one, actually, I liked, it kind of leads on from this, and also what we were saying about Iris. How do you find your personal style?
Oh, that's a big question, not for me.
Oh,
Nana?
So, yeah, I've been asked this before. I always say, for someone who's, like, completely kind of, like, green and, like, doesn't know how to do it, I always think mood boarding is a really good way to start. Kind of look at people either on Instagram or Pinterest and people's style that you like or that you would like to emulate, put that all together and pick out the elements of, is it the way she wears tailoring or dresses or the colour palette that she uses, and kind of use that as a basis and start from there. And then I think a really great thing about finding your personal style as well is knowing your body shape and knowing how to dress for your body. That's really, really important as well. So again, for me, that would be going to various different stores and trying on different pieces, different outfits, and working out kind of like what works for you and having that as the template and then building up from there.
Nice advice, practical advice. Mm. That's what we like. Lou?
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think, creating a kind of vision board of what inspires you and what that looks. And it doesn't need to be that then there's a kind of, there will be a consistent thread, but not like, oh God, all of these have got X in. Like, I think you'll just start to see patterns emerging.
Like a common theme.
Yeah, exactly. And also, it could be that, like, my evening wear is slightly more like this, my work wear, I want people more like that. Like, I think you can, it doesn't have to be refined to, like, one look either.
I think that's such a good point, because I think sometimes when people think personal style, they might be like, this person wears a lot of this colour, or this person only wears jeans and blazers, but that isn't it at all, really.
No, not at all. And, like, for example, like, that is me, but, like, that's
completely different.
When we were on the we did a live podcast a couple of weeks ago for the EIRs, and someone asked about a dressing kind of outside of London and whether you could kind of dress for different places that you live, and I was like, well, absolutely, like, if you want to, of course, like, you know, it's your own style, and if you feel that your style plays into that and you can play up to kind of different looks, then that's great. But I think it's just about finding what kind of works for you, your lifestyle as well, and what you're sort of drawn to, and have a really big try on, take pictures. I think it's really important. This might sound silly, but I remember reading Caroline Thvagre say that whenever she would go shopping, she would look at the outfit without her head, because I think if you're having a really good hair day or you're like feeling good, you can kind of persuade that things maybe look better.
That's really interesting.
Or also, if you're like not feeling good,
then it can just completely completely washed out.
Hide your face or cut it off, then you're really looking at just the outfit.
That's really good.
That's such a good tip.
Yeah, one of the other questions that we had at the team pod was about capsule wardrobe.
Yes.
Which we were saying your capsule wardrobe would look completely different to mine. And again, that's completely fine for whatever works for your style. Capsule wardrobe doesn't necessarily mean it has to be tonal and
the perfect white t-shirt, the perfect pair of trainers.
Capsule is kind of the base to the multiple looks.
Yeah.
And whatever that would be is very different. So I think don't get sidetracked to like its basics.
Yeah.
Oh, great advice, girls. A different tact now, beauty. Somebody said, I'm trying to get my makeup to stay on for longer during the day. What powders or setting sprays would you recommend that actually keep your makeup in place?
Well, I think I do have two quite good answers for
this. Go on then.
Yeah.
So YSL just brought out the All Hours powder and bronzer, and they're in those really bougie, like, quilted
cases. Yeah.
And I mean, they're amazing, but I had the powder and I have to say I've really noticed a difference in the way that my makeup stays in place with that. So that's a good one. And then for me, my absolute hero is the Charlotte Tilbury spray. I don't think it can be beaten. However, I will say that I do have quite dry skin.
Does that work with powder then? Because basically I get really dry skin on my cheeks in here. And then if I use powder, if I'm having a bad dry day, it just goes crusty.
So interestingly, I am dry through my T-zone, which I think is really unusual. So yeah, my sort of sheen, as it were, tends to happen in this region. Right. I also use it to set.
That's where you want the glow.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Whereas that's where I'm going horrid. Yeah.
Except that sometimes, particularly in the warmer weather, it can start to look sweaty as opposed to healthy.
Glowy.
So I do powder there and then I do set. I have quite dark circles. So I have to use the, well, my favourite product is the NARS Brightener that came out last year. Voting for that in the Beauty Awards, just saying.
Voting.
And so, yeah, I pop that on and then I pop some powder on that just to make it stay in place because it is quite a greasy product. But yeah, I've been loving that. And then I do think Charlotte Tilbury, if you have drier skin, it's good because there is a glow to it, but it also means that stuff doesn't move. But obviously, I have a very particular skin type. So if you are oilier, those... you might not find they work.
I have oily skin, but I also use Charlotte Tilbury. I have also used Fenty mattifying primer.
Okay.
So that kind of keeps me less oily like, throughout the day. And then powder wise, I use MAC Studio Fix.
So that's what I have.
I think that's great because it's really just settling and matte and again keeps everything in place. So they're my two.
Yeah. Okay, great. Great advice, Lou. I'm very new to this. I feel like I don't use it. And then I have occasionally, I'll be like, why do I not use this all the time? But my two is the Westman Atelier pressed powder. And it's in a really tiny little compact. It's so cute. It's got a bit of a pink undertone. I just do that like, under the eyes.
Okay.
T-zone. But that is more of a matte finish.
Right.
Or the Urban Decay All Nighter.
That's like the OG of setting sprays.
I think you can't beat that
then
one.
Maybe I do just need to, I mean, I might get the Charlotte Tilbury one to try, but I think
the
actually...
only difference I've noticed between the two, which I would say results-wise, they're not different, it's just on my drier skin, the Urban Decay can be a little bit over-drying.
Yeah.
Be a bit like a desert sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas the Charlotte Tilbury, I think, has a bit more of a glow finish, but... totally up to you what you prefer. They're both great.
Cool. I think we'll end things there. Thank you so much. Thank you everyone for watching and listening. If you've got any questions, please do email us at podcast@shitlux.com. We love hearing from you. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe and tell your friends, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.